Warning, this podcast contains rude, crude, and prude language, which might burn your ears if you listen to it for too long. Listener discretion is advised.
Previously on the A-Team.
You have Paulo, who is obviously an insane player, and he's good at tuning decks. He's not really known as a deck builder, but he's, you know, kind of taking charge, too, where he just stops all the bullshit. You know, people are just testing an irrelevant matchup. He's just like, why are we doing these?
Nice.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to you by ManaDeprived.com and 60cards.com. Check us out.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for mises they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team. KYT.
Everybody was metagaming against each other because we saw each other's decks.
Jay Boosh.
I'm not going to ask a homeless guy for a deck idea, okay? I'm going to give the guy some change, and, you know, I'll probably half my sandwich.
Smitty.
Just completely edit out Jay Boosh, like, out of the whole thing.
Scotty.
But what is it with people that live in French countries that like blue-white control? Are you guys just, like, you have that big of a chip on your shoulder? Like, what is it?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey everyone, this is KYT. Welcome to episode 37 of the A-Team Podcast. I'm with your co-host, Jesse, Scott, and Jay. And of course, we've got, I'd like to say, an extremely special guest. And today with us, none other than Scott. Would you like to say his name?
Oh, come on.
What?
You can do it.
That hard.
It's not that hard.
For Dama De Rosa. Come on now.
No, I wanted Scott to do his dad yell.
Yeah.
Or his jihad.
Oh, no, we don't need to get there tonight.
All right.
Motherfucking PV.
Damn right.
How's it going, Paolo?
Hi. Hello, everyone. I'm fine. How about you?
Very good. Very good. We're very excited to have you on because I'm heading to GP Providence in less than 2 weeks now, and a lot of legacy questions I want to ask you, and obviously standard with New Phyrex is exciting thing, and Scott and Jesse will definitely want to pick your brain at it. And then we got our limited champion who will have his set of questions. So I guess I'll start us off quickly with something I was curious about. PV, for a long time, because I knew you from playing on Magic League, and I also knew Julian. Man, I can't say his last name.
But
he went on to, yeah, Knutson?
Knowton, I think.
Knowton.
I think it's Knowton.
He went on to become world champion, and obviously you've made a big name for yourself. So did you play test a lot there? Like, I know you didn't play MTGO for a while, and you only got into it recently. So what was it like in your Magic League days, I guess? Did you focus mostly playing there to get to where you're at today?
Yeah, I played a lot there. Right now, I don't play there as much, but I don't play a lot of Magic Online either. I mostly play with, like, in Magic Station with people that I know from Magic League, but not specifically Magic League tournaments.
Okay.
And back then, yeah, I guess I just played a lot of them. There was not much going on where I live, so I didn't have a lot of choices. So if I wanted to play test, I just went there.
So for people who don't know, for listeners who don't know what Magic League is, it's a website that hosts certain tournaments that uses either, back in the day, either Apprentice or Magic Workstation. But a few years ago, they decided to go strictly with Magic Workstation. And it's just for people who didn't have MTGO and money for the cards, or, you know, I started off there and I became good friends with people there. And that's why I kept playing there for a long time. And it's still alive today, but of course Julian and PV have
moved on
and play less there, as PV just explained. But it's really cool to know, because now, like, when the Magic League Master tournament just finishes, a lot of us check the results and see if, you know, they're relevant. And you know, it's cool to see that, you know, players of the caliber of PV and Julian used to play there. So
the good thing about Magic League is that whenever the set comes out, it's instantly in Magic Workstation, even sometimes before it actually comes out. Whereas with Magic Online, you have to wait like a month. With Magic Workstation, you can just start playing it.
Right.
So a lot of, like, right now we see a lot of articles that bring up results from Magic League because that's all they have.
I find it really interesting that we've not had many pros on the cast that say, yeah, oh yeah, Workstation, you know, that's my primary testing field. I was going to ask you, you know, obviously, with where you live and stuff, and a lot of obviously the Fireball team being in California and such, like, I was going to ask you about how it is that you know try to get all your testing in with remote and whether it be Moto or whatnot, but Workstation then is your primary testing ground.
Yeah, for me, everyone else plays on Moto mostly from Channel Fireball, and I generally play in Workstation with my friends, and then whenever we meet before tournaments, we just discuss. I generally don't play with them online before the tournaments because they play Moto and I don't.
Right. So when you say you're playing with your friends, these are obviously like other players near to your caliber that you've got on your list to make sure you stay sharp. Because, I mean, the number one complaint about Magic Workstation that people have is the trolls and such that are the terrible players that don't even know the rules and are basically just, you know, bashing Lego blocks together and calling it Magic.
No, it's pretty bad for that. If you don't know who you're playing against, you just want to find an opponent, then it's going to be pretty bad. Your opponent's probably not going to know any rules, and you're going to explain to them, they're going to leave the game. it does happen all the time. But I play a few people I know, so it's there's actually no difference.
Nice.
Wow, imagine someone explaining the rules to PV.
I can just imagine like PV having to sit through that.
It's like the first time they put the friggin' the from 4 to 6 mountains on the Valakut trigger.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, it works, trust me. Yeah.
So PV, like, how do you? We were talking a little bit before the cast, and you said that you're pretty busy with school because of the trip that you have coming up. So how are you? For those of you that don't know, PV is going to take a month long trip to hit. I think it was 3 GPs and a Pro Tour. You said,
yeah.
So how are you preparing for all the different formats? Like the 3 different, or actually all 4 different events sound like they're all 4 different formats. So where do you find the time between, you know, whatever your personal life is and your job and et cetera, as well as, you know, like trying to finish up all this schoolwork, as well as trying to make sure that you're on top of your game, right?
Well, it's not that hard. There are a lot of hours in the day. You just have to stay focused, I think. Right now, I'm probably not playing as much as I should, but it's not because I don't have time. It's because I keep watching series and playing Dota and doing stuff that I shouldn't be doing.
Dota!
Yeah.
Wait, you actually play Dota over League of Legends, though?
Yeah. I do. I like Dota better.
Me too.
Aww.
Me too. I've been fighting Smitty on this for fucking ever. He's such a donkey. Dota is better.
I never actually played League of Legends, but I've tried Heroes of New Earth.
Yeah.
And it seemed better. It's just that I already know Dota and I like it.
Right.
And with the other games, I would have to learn everything again. And I couldn't even tell who was on my team when I played Heroes of New Earth.
Exactly.
Or where to buy stuff, what skills each person had. So I'm just happy with Dota. I'm probably going to stay there forever.
When you say it, PV, he's all like, yeah, that makes sense.
No.
I say it, he's like, you suck. League of Legends is so much better. You're an idiot.
I like Dota more, I guess, than having to learn everything again.
Fuck
that's,
yeah.
And that's Dota partially... Rules. Jay, that's partially true, but it is because it's PV. But second of all, he said he didn't play League of Legends, so you got to try League of Legends. It is probably a little learning curve since you're used to Dota, but whatever. It's all
so much worse. It's like fucking watching like the worst anime cartoon fight ever. It's like watching Dragon Ball Z in like English. And then, like, you're like, okay, I'm just going to stand here with, like, one of these broken characters somebody told me to play and not know any of the skills, and then I'll just get ganked all day and just fucking die. And then somebody like Jesse will just be like, you suck, noob. You suck, noob. Leave. You're just feeding. You suck.
Oh, man.
So it's sort of similar to Dota.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so to go back to the original question, I guess. But so you... you find that like you're just, you know, you're just Captain Superhero here, and you can just make time to prepare for everything, and then and slip it in with your whole personal life. Like, where do you find the time?
I don't know. I have a lot of extra time actually. I think people have the misconception that you have to like spend your entire day dedicating to something. Like, if I play like 2 hours a day, that's already a lot. And so I go to school for 6 hours a day. I read something that I have to read for school, and then I do some homework of some sort. And then I play for two hours, and there's still a lot of time left.
Yeah, to put it like in a more blunt point of view, Jay, I think he's saying he's not a lazy bastard.
Well, it's funny that you say that, PB, because like in Drew Levin's most recent article in Star City, I mean, he relates a story about a discussion that he was having with Jerry. And I mean, he was just burning out on the Star City Games, you know, grinder circuit or whatever. And he got to the point where he's like, I'm not getting any better. And I'm just, it's making me angry and I'm frustrated. And, you know, it's like, I'm not seeing the results, but I'm, you know, not, I'm putting in some work, but maybe it's not enough. And it's kind of like, you either have to have less fun, or you have less fun and take it more seriously. Like, do it, if you're going to treat it as a job, do it as a job. Right, so put the time in. Or if you're going to do it just because it's fun and you want to have more fun, then that's fine. Continue to put in less work and have more fun with it. So it's just interesting to hear your perspective, which is very much, yeah, 2 hours a day is fine. I don't know whether that's just a testament to the fact that you're a sick-ass Magic player or like what the deal is. But, you know, I mean, like 2 hours a day, it seems like, I mean, Jesse puts in 2 hours a day and I put in friggin' how much a day. So,
well, why isn't Jesse so good as PB then?
So, but this is what I'm getting at. So, like, this is what I'd like the answer to. Like, I mean, is it truly just a natural proclivity? Is it the fact that you've had, you know, so much experience that you're optimizing that 2 hours in the most efficient way possible? And if that's the case, how are you doing it?
Well, I think it's because I already know most of what I have to know. So I playtest so that I'm used to the decks, I'm used to playing the game, so I don't make like stupid mistakes. But I don't have to learn everything again. So it's more of a like keeping it instead of just learning. I don't know.
So do you find you're stronger at Constructed Magic or Limited?
Constructed.
Yeah, okay.
By far, I think.
Okay.
PB, I do have a question regarding time. How much time does it take you to write an article per week?
It depends on the article, actually. When I know what I'm writing about, like if it's a tournament report, which is something that just flows, or something that I really want to write about and I already have it all laid out, it's not very long. I don't, it depends on how big it is, like 2-3 hours for like 5,000 words.
Okay.
Or something.
Are you a perfectionist? Like when you write, do you like go back, edit it, and go through all the details?
Yeah, I do. But when I don't know what to write about, it takes a lot longer because I have to think about every paragraph. It doesn't just flow.
Or you've got to troll Twitter for article ideas, right?
That's my big thing. Like, Jesse's been harking on me to write. I just so that you're aware, PB, like, we had a little Wesco check bet for when we went to where did we go, Jesse?
GP Portland.
Yeah, it was GP Portland. And it was
Paulo
GP
got
Portland.
Eighth place in that one, too.
He did. I was there. I got his signature on my little barnacle mat. But we made this little Wesco check bet that if Jesse and I think it was KYT did better.
Jesse and Scott.
You mean Carr?
Carr, sorry. If Jesse and Scott could do better than me and KYT, then me and KYT had to write articles for Jesse's site, which is 60cards.com. And it's been, almost a year since GP Portland? And we still haven't written them because I don't know what to write. You have to think about every single paragraph, and like I'll get an idea for an article and then realize that you can just sum it up in like a sentence.
Jay,
yeah,
I have
that's
for you.
A problem.
What's
so
that?
How you embraced the Billy Moreno experience.
Oh, ouch.
Sickness.
Sorry.
No, PV, so does it starts to get to you that you have to write an article? I don't know what your actual schedule is or what your contract is, but imagine you have to write an article every week. So do you sometimes go, oh man, I'm just out of ideas?
Yeah, a lot of time. I don't technically have to write every week, but okay. I want to, and I mean, they hire me so that I write every week. If some week I cannot possibly write, then it's going to be fine. Okay. But they expect me to write every week. And yeah, sometimes there's just nothing to write about. And you have to come up with something, which is why some articles are awesome and some are not very good.
So talking about one of your articles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to kind of
bring it up.
Yeah, I gotcha. I want to kind of go back to, I think it was a couple weeks ago, and you wrote an article about the Splinter Twin combos and specifically one particular card. that Jesse kind of called out, like it was like his first snap pick for the set, you know, back when it was a measly $1.99, and Jesse picked it out, and he's like, oh, this card's going to be amazing. And then, of course, you know, you decide that you're going to write about it, and you say, hey, guys, this card really is, you know, the second coming, and it skyrockets to, like, $6. Spellskite?
Oh, yeah.
So I just wanted to see if you were aware of sort of what sort of effect that, you know, writers such as yourself, and especially of the quality and caliber of player that you are, have on the Magic economy. Like, just mentioning a card like that and putting your backing behind it instantly causes a huge uproar.
I mean, I don't think it's fair to say that I did that.
Yes, you did.
I mean,
you totally did.
You absolutely did.
I mean, it might be because people realized the card was good, or because other writers wrote about it, like, in conjunction.
Well, like, for example, on our last episode, Jesse went nuts about it, and I was still a little bit skeptical, and some other people were still a little bit skeptical. And we got a comment on that episode that says, I knew that when PV mentioned Spellskite, Jay was going to have to eat some serious crow. So he put it all on you, PV.
Okay. I mean, it's a compliment, I guess. I just don't Absolutely. Know if I have the power to like influence it that much. But
it's funny. I was thinking about that the other day, and I think like powerful writers such as yourself and Patrick Chapin, like have a huge and among many others, but have a huge say. In fact, I almost believe that writers and professionals as yourselves almost control the market right out the gate on cards. I think so, because like once you guys write about it and hype it, the prices go up because the stores know they can get that because people are listening to you. You know, you're getting these thousands of readers a day or whatever the big sites run. And then once the tournaments kind of play out the cards, Magic kind of figures itself out as far as the cards go. But yeah, absolutely. It was fun to see. But I do have a quick question for you on Spellskite. Where do you think it stands now as the one of the top cards in the set, as far as like maybe a top five card? Or
I think it really depends on how powerful Splinter Twin is, because it's really good in Splinter Twin and it's really good against Splinter Twin.
yeah, totally.
So if it turns out to be a very good deck, then it's going to be a very powerful card. But I don't think the card is intrinsically very powerful. Like Let's say they did not print the Sivrix Arc, I would probably not be playing Spellskite in any of my decks. So I think it really depends on what happens.
Is that still the case even with, you know, I mean, like, Spellskite kind of seems like it interacts really, really well against, you know, in trying to stop Tumble Magnet. Like, I mean, if you consider it from the Cobblade perspective, right? I mean, you know, Tumble Magnet seems to be, you know, sort of the number one, you know, way to deal with, you know, the sorted guys, or seems to be where people were headed with it. Being able to, you know, being it that it is an artifact person, you can just block, and the fact that you can basically, you know, make Tumble Magnet and Gideon and all those other sorts of activations terrible. Like, would that seem to have a, I mean, to me, it seems like it would have a bigger impact than just if it beats Splinter Twin.
I don't know. It seems kind of narrow to me. In that situation, I would probably not. I don't think it would be good. I mean, it wouldn't be bad, but I don't think it would be nearly as played as it's been if it wasn't for Splinter Twin. Like, both in Splinter Twin and against Splinter Twin.
Yeah. Okay.
And, a point. When you said the Drews said about having fun and practicing.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I do the most, and most days, like, when it's before tournaments, I usually playtest, but some weeks before the tournaments when there is nothing, I don't play Magic at all. I just read articles. And I read pretty much everything that there is to read. And it's something I like doing, and I think it really helps. It makes me think about the game, and it gives me like a metagame insight, even though I don't play. So I think a lot of practice for a tournament is knowing what's going on. And if you read articles, you do that. It's fun. I like reading articles. It doesn't take time at all. It's just natural. You don't need to give up anything that you're doing. Just casually read and...
Well, when you're as skilled, when you're as naturally skilled and practiced and honed a player as you are, that totally makes a whole hell of a lot of sense.
Well, I mean, yes, that's definitely true. But like, also as a deck builder, I like to try to pride myself on deck building, Paulo. But I've noticed that I need to test the decks a lot less as far as knowing how good they are against the meta, just by the amount I've already put in as a deck builder. So like the experience you put in like your early stages of your career, I guess if you want to call it, like you don't need to like relearn that, like Paulo was saying. So
you can really rely on that.
You can
rely,
yeah. Like you just see things faster and realize things faster, to where you don't need to do that. So yeah, I agree with what Paulo was saying.
So Paulo, when you're going through and deck teching or talking about like a new brew with the guys, or talking about like a limited archetype or pick order or whatever, do you guys ever get into the stupid arguments that like all the amateur Magic players seem to get in about like cards and stuff? Like do you look at Chancellor of the Tangle and immediately get like a boner for a turn one like Fauna
Lotus
Shaman?
Cobra, yeah.
Yeah, or do you realize that like sometimes those cards are just pipe dreams, and like how do you guys go through that process?
I mean, I think you have to imagine those scenarios, because if you don't, how are you gonna identify like a broken card? But you have to be reasonable too. I don't know, when I look at a new card, I think what's the best that can be done with it. And then I'll think of those Fauna Shaman or like Hypergenesis on turn one scenarios. But how likely is that? And then I start to think if it's going to come up, if it's even worth it, and what's going to happen if it's not the best case scenario. Is the card going to be good or not? Is it worth it? So yeah, I think we do look at every card the way most people do. We just learn to let go. If we think it's not good enough, and then it's not good enough. And it doesn't matter that it's going to be awesome when it's awesome, if it's not going to work most of the time.
So you are actually very well known, or it was came to us that you're very well known for being the one to say, why are we playing this? why are we playing this card? Why are we playing this deck? This is terrible. What are we doing here? And I wanted to ask you specifically, you know, would you agree with that? That's sort of a role that you excel in, or where would you fit yourself in as the expert in a playtesting team?
I'm generally the person who dislikes everything, which, and it turns out that I'm correct most of the time, because most things are bad.
Golden. You hear that, everybody?
Most things are bad. Like, most new cards in a set are bad. And I generally dislike everything, which means
Mark Rosewater.
I mean, bad for a competitive level. And sometimes I miss on stuff that's potentially great. But I think most of the time I help keeping people down to earth. When they try to be too fancy, I force them to see what they're not trying. Like, they want the card to be good, but one thing is not enough. They have to explain to me why it's good, because I'm not easily convinced. And then they can't explain it to me. And so they realize that it's just not good.
That's awesome.
It's beyond awesome.
I want to test with you.
What he means to say is he wants to learn from you.
Yeah.
Yes.
I write articles every week.
Yeah.
Oh, got you.
I read them too.
All right. So it looks like New Phyrexia obviously has just come out. Yeah. If you had to pick sort of your top, I mean, we can look at it from Legacy and Standard perspective, and I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but I mean, what are your top three picks out of the set for Legacy, and what are your top three picks out of the set for Standard?
I think for Legacy, Mental Misstep definitely is the most important card.
Yeah.
And Better School is probably up there too. If Stoneforge Mystic is a player, then Better School is part of the reason why it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And Legacy too. And I'm not really sure about a third card. I might be missing something. I don't play a lot of Legacy, and I generally don't look at sets with a Legacy mindset.
Okay.
But I don't remember anything else that I would be... I mean, I guess you can count the Chancellors in your Hypergenesis deck, or the blue guy that costs 10 that you draw seven cards.
Yeah,
for
like
Reanimator.
Reanimator,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would probably choose him, even though those cards don't change anything in the format. They just make certain decks a little bit better in certain situations.
Right. Okay. So that's fair. So in that case, then, so we'll come back to Legacy. We can ask you about your coming tech for that event. But what do you feel are the most the biggest players in Standard from New Phyrexia?
I think the Sivir's Arc.
Yeah.
However you pronounce that name, I have no idea.
You got it right.
Okay. Better School and probably Sword of War and Peace.
Yeah.
I mean,
is the Sword of War and Peace that good because of the Mystic, or would it be in an environment where without the Mystic, the swords would still be good? As good as they are. Would you still put it in your top three?
No, I think it's only good because of the Mystic. I mean, it's not a bad card, but the reason it's good is because it gives Pro White. The abilities are not that good. They're good, but Pro White is the most important thing. And the only reason Pro White is so important is because there's a Stoneforge Mystic deck, which blocks their Squadronhawks with your Hawks. So if there is no Mystic, the card gets worse because you can search for it and play it for two. And it also gets worse because the deck is the best against is not going to be as popular.
Right.
So I don't think we'd see a lot of play if there wasn't Mystic.
Nice.
So time to sell your swords when Stoneforge rotates.
I mean, who knows what's going to happen to them. But yeah, I wouldn't bet on playing many swords. Like, for example, in Block Constructed, I don't see myself playing swords. Even though it's different because everyone's going to play artifact removal, they're just not good equipments by themselves, I don't think. Like the way Sword of Fire and Ice is.
Yeah, well, I mean, in competitive Magic, I mean, Sword and Fire and Ice really kind of like set the tone, right? I mean, you're like shock and draw a card. I mean, those are two of the most, you know, best repeatable effects that you can have in a constructed environment, right? So that's really good. Okay, so Legacy, Providence, do you have any idea what you're playing, or who are you looking to for tech?
No, probably people in the Chain of Fireball team. Yeah, I have no idea what I'm playing. It's probably going to have blue in it, because every single time I've played Legacy in my life, I've played Force of Will and Brainstorm, and I don't see a reason to change that now.
I haven't started testing yet, PV.
Yeah, I haven't. I played a couple games with some decks that people showed me to see which one I like most. But I think right now, the Pro Tour is by far the most important thing, and we can really focus on Legacy, and Legacy doesn't change that much. Even though there is a very important card, Misstep, in the new set, it's probably not going to change that much. So we're just going to go through the decks that already existed and pick one, probably.
Nice. Okay. So Pro Tour is which again? Sorry? Block?
Yeah, Block and Draft, but 10 rounds of Block.
Okay. So you've been playing your fair share of Block then, obviously.
Not that much either.
He's a natural. He's a natural.
I love it. I love it.
I talk a lot about it. We discuss a lot. And when people play and they like report results, and it's people you trust, it's almost as if you're playing concerning like which deck is good. Then you have to play yourself to become like proficient with the deck.
Yeah.
But to like build a meta game, people give you like information on what happened, and then you share the small amount of playtesting that you also did. And right now we have a problem because we have a closed group for the Pro Tour. We don't want to share information with anyone else. And we cannot play on Magic Online because the site is not out yet. And they all hate Magic Workstation. So I'm just not playing Block right now.
So can you share the people in your group? Like, obviously, don't share the details of your testing. Clearly, we got to respect that. But who else is in this group specifically you've got in for closed testing?
It's me, Luis, Martin, Yuza, Lucas, Martin Schran, Owen, Conley, Brad Nelson, Brian Kibler, Colin
Woods.
Oh
my god.
Matt Ness.
What an amazing play group.
Josh Ederleyden, David Oshoa, and Eric Froelich.
Oh
I think that's
god.
It.
Jesus.
You guys are going to break it again, aren't you?
I guess
Hopefully.
I got it. test some more because I've been testing a lot, but I'm not going to beat you guys.
You know, you sound a lot like Madness.
Well,
I keep thinking it's him.
That's funny.
Speaking of people in my group.
No, Paula, you should tell him about Cockatrice. It's just like MWS, and I can't play MWS. It's like I just can't stand it. But Cockatrice, for some reason, super user-friendly, way easy to use. If you get on with a buddy in Skype, it's super easy. So maybe you can convince him by taking a look at that.
You can also lock out your games, too, so that nobody can watch you, and you can only allow the people that you want on your buddy's list to interact with you. So it's kind of nice from that perspective as well.
Yeah, I've never actually played it. So it's think it's kind of like the Dota thing, where I'm so used to the other program
right.
that I just stay with it. It does everything I needed to do.
That's fair.
Yeah. Other training.
Yeah, it's pretty similar. The hotkeys and stuff are all the same.
So we have a random Twitter follower that is a borderline stalker for you, loves you to absolute pieces, and would probably half kill me if I didn't ask you this one single solitary question. Are you single?
Who asked that?
I can't tell you. She'll kill me.
You can tell me?
I can tell you, but only after you answer.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm single.
Nice.
Ooh la la.
All right.
Now, who is she?
Should we throw her under the bus?
I can't do that.
Oh, okay. It's up to you.
I'll just tell you I'll just tell you in the chat window.
All right.
So,
we might have gotten you a date. Lady. If so, you owe us.
So secret block tech, obviously. So if you can't talk about tech, then what are we going to do?
Oh, actually, I can't. God, I want to talk block so bad, but I just can't, and I know you can't either.
Yeah, any other topic?
Out of curiosity, for our listeners that don't play Block, Block is kind of a new format to a lot of players just because outside of Magic Online, you don't see it a whole lot unless it's like within your like league or your play group. So just out of curiosity, is the reason that you guys can't talk about Block very much and your tech because it is very narrow and there's not, you know, 9 sets worth of options?
I mean, that's one thing, certainly. They're not going to be that many good decks. So if we find one, we're going to keep it to ourselves. But the biggest reason we're being so like secretive this time is that for the previous tournament, we were not as adamant in not sharing information. And a lot of the people in the group ended up losing to people who are not in the group and who did not contribute in any way to building the deck because those people had their deck. It's been like building up for a lot of tournaments until it's happened to a lot of different people. So this time we've decided to cut it close and see how it works, not sharing with anyone.
PV, does that actually work? Because I feel like I have some friends that go on a pro tour and it seems like the Friday they arrive or something, they already know what team Fireball is playing. They already know what team Star City Games or the guys Chapin, Jerry are playing or who the French are playing. Like I get some people who tell me, I think it was the last pro tour day. Like I heard about people heard about the Cobblade deck on Friday already. And, that the French were playing the green white quest deck. So I imagine it just, you can't help it. It just spreads pretty fast. Someone's going to leak it somehow or play test in front of other players.
Yeah. That's why we want to stop. Hopefully.
Because like Pro Tour Paris, I remember like people telling me about the decks already. So hopefully, for your team's sake, it will be kept under wraps until you finally put the deck in action. So,
since you mentioned the French there, KYT, we got a segue. Oh God, I'm gonna get killed for that one. There'll be like a burning fleur-de-lis outside on the front of my fucking lawn by the time we're done. Anyways.
You take it. Just burn your house down.
So, can you chime in on the whole Guillaume Gate thing with the leak and whatnot? I mean, what as a very seasoned and extremely professional player, I mean, let's be honest, you're right up there with pro points. I mean, there's what, nobody behind you, like, or nobody ahead of you, you know, like, so talk to us a little bit about how you feel that impacts the game.
Or maybe you can also shed some light from a pro perspective on the people themselves, like on what happened specifically as well.
I mean, I can't talk for anyone else. I can talk about what I think.
Yeah.
I think it's not good that they shared this information, like that they shared the guidebook to the magazine writers before everyone else has them. But at the same time, I understand that if they want those magazines to exist, they have to do it. I wish they would not do it to people who are going to play in the Pro Tour against other people who don't have this advantage. But at the same time, if they're going to give it to people who are not very good, who's going to write the article about those cards? So I don't have a solution for that.
Kind of a catch 22.
Yeah, in my mind, it would be better if those magazines just stopped existing or if they learned to deal with the fact that they're a month behind.
Yeah, it's 2011. I think Paula brings up a really good point here.
You have a magazine, so that's like, bad for you. But...
Hello? It's 2011 French Lotus Noir. Get with the times. Get internet over in France. You have Evian.
Yeah. And I mean, it would not be very bad if people actually followed the disclosure agreements. Like, what's Matching Young going to do with the cards by himself? He's not going to do anything. It only gets bad if he shares it with people who are then going to help him playtest.
The other thing I think though too though is even if he was the only person that had them, like, don't you feel a little bit like left out or screwed out of something that he's not? Like, I mean, especially for example with Block, like if yours being so secretive because of these factors and he's, you know, ahead of the game by having the new set like weeks or a month in advance, doesn't that put you at a disadvantage as well?
I mean, if he's the only one knowing, I don't think it would bother me at all. Like, to give you an example, the set was leaked, the whole set, mm-hmm. and we didn't start playing Block for up to 2 weeks after that happened. So even if we had the whole set before, we would not have done anything with it. So it's possible that he just got the set and did not do anything. What bothers me is that he was sharing it with other people so that they could do something before. And that, right. I think, is fair. But at the same time, I don't know. I have a problem seeing it as, for example, it's not, for me, it's not the same as someone drawing like five extra cards. Like, if someone does that, I'm never going to be able to trust them again. Like, if I catch someone that I know and respect cheating in that way, all respect is gone.
And forever.
Yeah. I mean, not forever. Forever is a very long time, but they're going to have to redeem themselves. And with the Guillaumes, I think the price you're paying is already, like, not for what they did to the game. For what they did to the game, I think it's a fair price. It might be even a small price. But for what they did, according to themselves, they're paying for a lot more, I think.
Yeah, so those are all great points, man.
So I think they do not lose a lot of respect to my eyes. I still respect them as players, as people. I still like them. If I randomly meet them, I'm going to talk to them just the way I talked to them before. And when they come back, it's, in my eyes, it's going to be the same as it was before, if they ever decide to come back playing.
Right. Because it's not like it's gameplay-related issues.
It's not gameplay. It's just that it seems like they made a mistake. And it's just that I know both players, and I like them. And, for example, Matching Young apologized publicly after he got caught, so to speak. And for most people, I would think that the only reason they're apologizing is because they have nothing else to do. It was already found out that they were the person who did it. So they want to make it better for them. They want to say they're sorry that they didn't mean to do it and that they didn't think it was ruining the game. But they would say that regardless of what they thought. But with Matching Young, I think he actually thinks that. I think he's actually sorry. So I don't know if it's just me thinking that or because I know him, but that's the way I feel.
I don't know him, and I get the vibe that he's pretty sincere, honest, just awesome, all-around great guy, just from, like, the times I've seen him talk on live camera and all that. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think he's definitely sincere in his apology there, in that public apology on Wizard's site.
It's good.
Hey, I still love Saito, too.
Yeah, Saito's a different matter. I don't know.
We won't get into it. We've touched on it too many times on this podcast.
We've beaten that horse to death.
I don't know if we have. PV, what do you think?
No.
Should I answer?
If you want to.
I mean, I don't know, honestly. Yeah. Don't know. I don't know what to think. Whereas with Yomes are like more inclined to believe then. With Saito, I just don't know. I think it's possible that he actually in some way he thought he was doing something that was not illegal.
Okay.
Because, for example, if no one told him to stop, well, I just was watching and no one told him to stop, so therefore it must be legal.
Right.
I guess. I don't know. Like a couple episodes ago, I talked about playing for Natsukis and this player that isn't new but was bad. So I don't know how close that is. But basically, somebody was fate sealing him with Jace. And every time they said bottom, he would look at the card and then put it on the bottom. And he looked at it so much that, like, me and my partner, or me and my opponent who were sitting in the game next to him, my opponent could see clearly that card. And so we went and told the judge. And then when the judge showed up, the guy switched modes on Jace. He stopped fate sealing him because he didn't need to anymore. He started brain storming. So the judge never caught him. And when I brought it up to the judge and said, like, hey, why didn't you say anything or whatever, the judge was, like, made that excuse where he was like, well, maybe he didn't know that what he was doing was illegal. Yeah, and it was well, I guess. But, like, how – like, when you play at the level that Saito plays at, like, how could you not know that you're doing something wrong?
The thing is that what defines a slow play, like stalling, is that you play at a speed that is not reasonable because you want the game to go long. But there is no definition for what is reasonable speed. The judge has to tell you what's reasonable speed. So if you're playing and the judge is not saying anything, therefore it must be reasonable speed. I mean, I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm saying that it's possible that this was his logic.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and slow play is something, it's very hard to judge. Especially because, the judges are not going to be as good as Saito. So they're not actually going to know 100% for sure when Saito has to think. For example, they said he changed his pace a lot after he looked at the clock. But Saito explained that this happened because his opponent killed his guy or something. And that changed the whole dynamics of the match. Whereas before he just had to pass, then something happened, and then he had to think every turn. I'm not saying this is actually what happened, but since I was not there,
yeah.
I think it's possible that he really deserves being banned for that and for a lot more. And it's possible that he doesn't, and I have no way of saying it. I think it's a completely different matter than the jumps.
So who's your favorite pro player to play with?
With? Like, not against. Yeah.
Like against, to hang out with, to see. Because, like, you live in Brazil, right?
Yeah.
So like we spoke on this earlier, like the Channel Fireball team, they all kind of live in the same area, or at least in the United States, they can see each other at, you know, every Star City Open, at every GP, etc. You living in Brazil, like I imagine that you probably don't get to see these people as much as, say, some of them would. So like, who's your favorite person to go and see and hang out with?
I think my two favorite people are Luis and Martin.
So Martin Juza and Luis Scott Vargas.
Yes.
So are you a fan of Louis or Louise puns?
Nice, Jay. Nice.
like yeah, like puns. Tell us the gruesome encore story.
Well, I mean, I'm a fan of them when they don't get excessive, which is every time.
So you're not a fan.
I like reading it in the set reviews. I think they make it for very pleasant set reviews. But the gruesome encore joke was that every time we were playtesting for Paris, and every time they would manage to put a gruesome encore in a booster somehow that you were being passed while you were drafting, and then sometimes you just pick a pack from the person next to you, and it would be like 7 gruesome encores. And I actually caught on the joke a little bit after, because they were all in San Francisco or San Diego for a week before I met them. So they were already doing gruesome encore things. And they all laughed at it, and I never thought it was any funny. And then at points, we would be like, play a Jace and fate seal someone, and the card on top of their deck would be gruesome encore. Or you'd play Oracle of Mudaya and flip the top card of your deck would be gruesome encore. Just stop stopping gruesome encore. And at some point, I was like, guys, the Pro Tour is tomorrow. I don't want to be drawing gruesome encores with my Oracle of Muta. I have to figure out what I'm going to play. And then, the day of the Pro Tour, like 5 minutes before pairings went up, I asked to see what Luis had in his sideboard.
Oh, no.
He handed me a of gruesome encores. Like, if you don't have a sideboard, and you have time to like group seven gruesome encores together and hand it to me. So, I mean, it didn't make me mad or anything. It's just not something I would do.
Oh, that's funny.
That's pretty funny.
Did it do it to you more specifically because you didn't think it was funny?
Probably. Isn't that how it always happens?
Poor PB.
I mean, it's not bad. It was just, it kind of annoyed me at some point that we were wasting time that we didn't have anything.
Hey, come on, guys. I'm trying to test here, god damn it.
I only play Magic 2 hours a day, and even then, only during up season.
I can't waste 15 minutes making gruesome encore jokes, you bastard. Get a sense of humor.
It's not like that. It's not like I don't have a sense of humor. Sometimes it was pretty funny when it wasn't.
I can imagine that the funniest is when they slip the card on top when you know, go to Fate Seal them with Jace, and somehow they've just thrown it into the top and you flip it over. I imagine that's probably pretty good.
Yeah. Every time they'd be like, so Paulo, why do you think of this card? And it'll be a gruesome encore. Like, should I keep his hand? And it's just gruesome. Yeah. You know, it just never stops.
I'm totally gonna troll somebody at FNM and like during like a practice match or like even after, like if I've already been eliminated, I'm just gonna put three gruesome encores top of a Jace player's deck when he brainstorms.
That's the kind of thing.
So PB, what is your most memorable moment of your entire Magical history? Like, what's the one defining moment that you would say if you had to look back and you were known for one thing, what would it be?
I think winning the Pro Tour was pretty memorable.
I'd say
so.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the most memorable though. I think the actual most memorable was the first Pro Tour top 8 that I had, which was teams in Charleston, and it was me and two other Brazilian guys, Vilya and Celso, and it was really, really cool. It was like breaking some barrier that, you know, maybe never thought you were going to break. It just introduced me to a completely different way of looking at Magic, and it was especially good because we did it as a team. So I think you have to pick one memory, that top 4 in Charleston. We lost the finals, but it's really the most memorable one.
And then you followed it up by winning your nationals a couple months later.
Yeah.
Bam.
That's true. That was great.
Yeah.
I also think another pretty memorable moment was at that same year, World's Top 8, where I played against Mihara, Makihito Mihara.
Yeah.
And I was playing Boros, just playing Dragonstorm. And we were 2-2, we were going to the fifth game. And the fifth game, I mulliganed to 5. And then I stopped at my second land. I did not play second land for a turn. Then I was completely devastated. I thought I was just going to lose. And I mean, it was okay, but I thought I couldn't possibly win. And at some point, he started playing spell after spell. I'm like, okay, he's going to kill me. And then he paused, and he looked devastated. And then I realized that he was one mana short. So, and he actually just counted and stared at nothing for like 5 minutes. Like, you can probably find it on a video somewhere. It was literally 5 minutes. And then he was like, hey, whatever, like, repeal your guy, you know, draw a card. Then he drew his third Rite of Flame and killed me, which was the one card, because he was short one mana, and he used 2 for a repeal. And then he drew Rite, which would give him 3, like, 4 mana. The 2 that he needed was one for Rite.
That he needed to get there.
Yeah, so it was the only card. And it was weird, because it went from, like, the completely I'm losing this game, to when I started looking at his expression, I'm like, maybe I'm winning this game. Then at some point I was like, well, I'm surely winning this game. And then he killed me.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, brutal.
Dude, that's the worst.
So, how in the hell, I've got to ask, did you let LSV convince you not to play Jace at the Grand Prix, which you top 16'd with Boros?
It didn't take much convincing, to be honest. I didn't want to play the mirror match all day long. I wanted to play something else. And I thought Boros was good. He never tried to convince me, really. We just talked about it, and he said he liked it. I said I liked it, and we played it.
Wow.
I think we both would need a lot of convincing to play Blue White. We didn't want to play Blue White, so we played something else.
Yeah, more power to you. Do you think Cobblade's going to be dethroned by these Deceiver decks or the Splinter Twin decks?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be as dominant as Nothing, but it's still going to be the most important deck.
For sure.
Now, do you see that potentially being the case until rotation? Like, I mean, obviously Stoneforge Mystic right now is just stupid, right, in its versatility?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that the Stoneforge Mystic decks are very, very well tuned. Like, there were a lot of very good people working on them for a long time. So they're pretty much perfect. Whereas the Splinter Twin decks, or a deck with, say, Birthing Pod, or like Tazzeret, or whatever, we don't have the perfect versions of those decks yet. So maybe when we do, those decks are going to be better than the Cobblade deck. But right now, they're just like sketches, and Cobblade is already perfected. So it's not going to get better, and other decks can get better, but right now, I think it's just a better deck.
So if you were playing in a standard FNM tomorrow night, you would be looking for Cobblade then as your deck to go to?
Well, if I was playing an FNM, I would probably play something different because I would want to playtest for the GP. Try something different, but if I wanted to win the FNM, yes, I would play Cobblade.
Blue-White or the new Darkblade Splash, which came out of the Star City Open Orlando?
I don't know. I've never liked the black version. I haven't played with it after the new set, so I would just play Blue-White. But maybe it's better. I can't tell you if it's better or not. I think it's worse.
I think it's funny that you mentioned that, because I feel that way about your Splinter Twin deck.
Why do you mean?
So you just
like the black?
It's like it's on now.
I feel that the blue red deck in the playtesting that I've done is better than the blue red black deck. Now, I'm not saying that I'm right and you're wrong. I'm just, in my experience, what I've come up with is just that I don't like having the black splash, and I find that like ripping a duress late is really like bad when I just want to draw anything else.
I mean, it's certainly possible. I didn't play nearly enough to tell you which version is better. Again, those decks are not very well tuned. They're just new versions of decks that I believe in a couple of months are probably going to be very good, but right now are just very raw. I can't tell you. I think black is better, but I cannot tell you that black is better. It's certainly possible that black is just worse. Maybe, I don't know, green is better. Maybe white is better. Maybe... It could be. Maybe five color. I really can't tell you.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
So I guess – so you read obviously a ton of articles. So you've got to be up to date in terms of all of the Star City Games invitationals and all of the results and stuff that are coming through there. So the mini pro tour, as it were, right?
Yeah.
nice chuckle. Good. Okay. So do you feel that these sorts of things are really good for standard? Like, I mean, when Modo first came out, you know, everyone was kind of like, well, this is the anvil on which we can forge our, you know, superior decks because we can just grind so many matches. You've now got, you know, reasonably sized tournaments to go along with that that are happening almost every weekend across the continental United States. So, you know, these decks are getting perfected, as you said, very quickly. Do you feel this is good for you as a pro for the format, or do you feel that this, you know, take some of your advantage, like your block brewing, for example? I mean, if we were doing block tournaments all the time, your testing would be a lot less relevant, right? Like, is this good for standard from the pro tour perspective, or is it taking away some of the edge?
I mean, I think for standard in general, like for the format, is definitely good, but for me, I'd probably rather they did not exist. If all you're talking about is my edge in tournaments, I think my edge would be bigger if they do not exist. Because I think I'm more likely to realize something than a specific random person is. But when you put like a group of people together, like the whole Star City community, they're very likely to realize anything. I mean, someone in that tournament is going to come up with whatever I come up with.
Right.
So, yeah, I would prefer... I mean, they help me too. They give me a grasp of the metagame, what I have to beat. And... I guess there's nothing that anyone else can do. I mean, that came out to my belly. But let me think how to phrase that. So the weight, like, those tournaments, they give you what to play and what you have to beat, but they don't necessarily give you how to play against a deck or how to beat it. And in this perspective, it's better for me because it gives me more information to work with, and I believe I work better with the information than other people are going to do.
That's fair.
So if you tell me what I'm going to play against every round, I'm probably going to come up with a deck that beats that deck more likely, like more often than a random person. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, perfect sense. Perfect sense. So okay. would you feel like in general then, given this all of this information, like are you the type that's more likely going to take sort of the top deck and make some tweaks to be able to, you know, make sure you've got the edge in the mirror? Or are you more the type of person that will take a look at the metagame, and if you see, you know, that there's maybe a deck that's, you know, could very well be poised to be the deck that weekend, to go ahead and brew that up or brew something, you know, totally off kilter and take it by surprise? Like, what are you more prone to do?
I'm more likely to just play one of the better decks tweaked the way I like it. I mean, I'm not opposed to playing something different, but I think most of the time is not the best decision. So if I see something and I think it's going to be the best decision, I'll happily play it, as I've done before. But most of the time, I think the best deck or the best decks are just the actual best decks.
Right. Okay.
And so right now, that's Cobblade, and that's what you'll be playing.
probably. I don't know. I still haven't given up on Splinter Twin, so I'll probably try them some more. And again, if they don't work, then I'll just play Blue White.
Yeah.
PB, what's the difference between now and before, where you just, you know, you were known as one of the best, if not the best, fairies players, and that was the only deck that you would play for a long time? Did you bother testing or brewing up much, or did you just know it was like the best deck? You knew the deck the most and all the complexity, and you just went with it at every tournament.
The first time I played fairies was in Hollywood, Pro Tour Hollywood. And before the tournament, we knew it was kind of like the deck to beat.
Okay.
But and so every deck we tried against it, we just lost. So it was beating everything in our testing to a point where I just realized that I was just going to play it. It would be better to just perfect playing that deck. And we had played it so much because we played everything against it that we also knew what we had to play against when we were playing fairies. So I think for that tournament, it was the best deck that I could possibly have played. It did not have the best results in that tournament, but it was probably the best deck. And since then, I feel like fairies has been the best deck in many, many formats, but people don't actually know that. Because fairies is so hard to play against that a lot of the time, and it's so hard to play with, that people's playtest is not correct. People, like, everyone will tell you that they play fairies, that they beat fairies.
Right.
So people will be like, well, I just play some Sable Stags or Fallouts, and this deck smashes fairies. And no one would ever think that their deck lost to fairies. But it actually did. And people didn't respect fairies. So even though it was the best deck, it was almost like it wasn't in terms of being targeted. But with Blue White, everyone knows Blue White is the best deck. And it's not that hard to play against or that hard to play with.
Okay.
So people are going to have better, like more accurate results when they practice against Blue White.
Okay.
And they're not going to play decks that lose to Blue White because they know it's the best deck.
So your edge is different. So your edge is completely different, you're saying. Okay.
I think so. Because, with fairies, people went to a tournament thinking that they beat fairies, which is why they picked those decks. They would not play those decks if they thought they lost to fairies because they knew fairies was the most popular deck. But with Cobblade, I think when they think their deck beats Cobblade, it actually does a lot more often than it did with fairies. So I think I'm more likely to play against decks that are actually good against me than when I was playing fairies.
But yet, for some reason, maybe my memory is wrong, you were known as like the fairy guy for some reason. Then, despite it being the most popular deck, like you said, it's like every time I think of fairies, I think of PV or green black elves. All Shuhei was playing was green black elves. In that exact format for a long time, so.
Yeah.
Wait.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. I guess I just played a lot with fairies and I had some very good results. I've top eight two Pro Tours with fairies.
Jay's and a laughing. GP. Hey, PB sent an article that he hated calling the deck Fae, so I specifically called him Fairy Guy.
Yeah, that's a lot better than Fae. I don't like Fae.
But yeah, I mean, like when I saw that, when I saw you having success just playing fairies and seeing Shuhei just having success playing green-black, and I look at Star City Games and certain of the top players have success playing a specific archetype, like Rug, when you're talking about Alex Bertoncini, and he's a Merfolk specialist in Legacy, and that made me want to just play, like right now, I just want to play Clawblade. I've been playing Clawblade, qualified for Nats with it, and that's probably what I'm going to play at Nationals. So,
yeah, I think there's definitely that. It's really important that you really know your deck. I think you would probably be better playing a deck that you really know how to play and is slightly worse than a deck that is better but you have no idea how to play it. So, and you do get an edge back when you play so much. You know all the situations, you know all the scenarios, the hands you can mulligan, the hands you can, the tweaks we can play you with the deck. Like, it's really an advantage to know your deck well, I think. Especially in a deck like Fairies, where everything was instant speed, and things have so many modes, like Cryptic Command and Mistbank, like you could play it at any time in the game. So yeah, I think it really makes a difference.
Too bad it's not a Legacy deck.
Yeah.
I'd love to see you play in Legacy.
And yeah, I don't even know if I remember how to play it properly. I would have to play past some, I think.
Oh, no!
It's changed a lot now.
Right, yeah, it has.
For example, like Creeping Tar Pit already makes things different, and like Sword of Fist and Famine, and Jace's, like Jace's Mind Sculptor do not exist when I play Fairies. So it's different. I would probably have to play some if I were to play it today.
2 hours of testing. You'd be set to go.
I mean,
no, I know. I just,
I mean, I don't have to learn everything again. I just have to remember
it. It's get familiar. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, because you don't play Moto PV, how do you practice limited?
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's awesome.
Generally, I just play before tournaments. Like, we get to the tournament a week earlier, and then I'll talk to people, get opinions, and then we'll play like in real life. I mean, at this point, no one can play drafts on Moto anyway for the Pro Tour because the set is not up. Not even in beta, you can play drafts. So everyone's gonna have that problem. There is a program. It's called NatDraft. You can use to draft it, and then you play on Magic Workstation. But I don't actually play it much. I used to a while ago, but not anymore.
That makes sense. That seems like a lot of work, though, for sure.
Yeah, it's not that bad. I mean, I'll play drafts on Magic Online sometimes, especially for videos, but I just don't like Magic Online. It's,
yeah.
I don't know, I just don't like it. Just don't like it.
But no one else likes Workstation, so you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. It's fine, though. I mean, we meet before, and I think there's no amount of testing that we can do before we go to the place that's going to be even close to what we do once we get there. Because once we get to the place, we play a lot more than 2 hours.
Yeah,
I think I was actually like being generous with 2 hours. I play a lot less before I go there. But once we get there, we play for 10 hours a day.
Wow.
And it's a lot.
Holy fuck.
All we do is...
Dude, I sit and play Moto for at least that some days when I'm grinding dailies.
Why aren't you learning anything, then?
Well, it's because he's grinding against monkeys on Moto. He's not fucking sitting there and playing Magic for 10 hours a day against the top 10 best players in the world.
You need to play on Workstation for 10 hours a day, I think, Jesse.
Oh, God.
I mean, the problem is, when you play a tournament for 10 hours, it's not really... I mean, it takes you 10 hours, but I could probably play in 30 minutes as many games as you played, or like in 1 hour.
Yeah.
Because we play with a purpose. There's no wasted time. We just play and play and play, and then we change something, we play again. When you join the tournament, you were stuck with that deck for the entire tournament. And we are a lot of people playing a lot of different decks, and then when someone likes something, they tell the others, and then we can start changing it in every deck at the same time, and then it just moves really quickly. Sometimes we have a completely new idea. We have a lot of cards. We build it. We play it. 5 games against the top decks. We realize we don't like it. And in 2 hours, we've made a deck and completely thrown it away.
Right. Yeah, no, that's true. Well, yeah, that's true. It does take longer if you're if you've got a groove going like that and people with the cards ready and you just go. I can see that. But my dream's not even to play on the pro tour. It's to just be a part of one of these damn epic pro teams that you guys got going on. That sounds so much fun. I love deck brewing so much. That sounds like an epic time.
And I mean, we really focus on Magic. I remember for Paris, Carlos, I don't know if you know Carlos Ramon, the other Brazilian player. He played us.
The only other Brazilian player?
No, yeah, that's not what I meant.
You heard it here first, other Brazilians. Everybody sucks except for Carlos and PV.
No, that's not true. That's not what I meant. I mean, he won Worlds, so you probably know him. But he went with us for Paris for the first time, and he was talking to me after, and he mentioned that it was really weird because we only talked about Magic and Magic-related people and stuff like that happened with Magic. At some point, someone brought up like the finals of the Super Bowl, and then we talked about that for 5 minutes, and then we resumed talking about Magic. And he said that if he was in his group of friends, they would be talking about that for 2 hours. And we just like slightly went off our main subject and we went back to Magic. Like all the jokes are about Magic people. It's, we relate everything to Magic. It's really, it's only 3 or 4 days, but it's 4 days of intense Magic.
So it's like four days of that would be something akin to, you know, the average player playing for like 4 years. Like that's crazy. This is, I'm completely in awe. I mean, I think about the time that I spent with, like, even just these guys, right? Like, I'm functionally the worst Magic player on this podcast.
I love this.
Like, it's I affectionately say, I'm functionally terrible at this game. Okay, so like, I'm the guy that makes, you know, the terrible plays and misses all that crap, and yeah. So it's just because, you know, like, I'm in it more for the fun than, you know, I'm casually competitive and call it a day, right? No aspirations for the pro tour here. But I just find that, you know, even just playing with like Jay and KYT, you know, they came down for an event in Toronto, thanks to our fantastic listeners. And what I found was, it's just like, even just the experience of that focus and playing with people that, you know, are better than you, that help you find, you know, that the more optimal plays. I mean, it really helps to coach your brain to be more efficient at doing so. And I just found that, you know, for me, that was a big help. I can only imagine, like, it staggers me to consider the amount of information that could possibly be processed in a think tank like you guys have going right now. Like, that's insane. And it's something ridiculous that it really, maybe you don't see it because you're so deep in it, but it's crazy. It's crazy for players like us to consider that.
Yeah, I don't know. It does seem pretty crazy. It works, yeah.
So you don't practice much limited, and that's fair. When they reversed the draft order, any of that have any sort of impact whatsoever on the way that you look at things, or just it's another three set of cards and or another three packs? Let's go.
I mean, it's different. At that point, I did not change anything because it's not like there was a draft format and then it changed.
Yeah.
There was a draft format which was three post cars, and then it became besieged double scars. So it was gonna change anyway. It just changed a little bit more. So I think for me, I like the change. I think it forces you to like reevaluate the cards that you had already. Like, you can't just memorize how good a card is, and then have like a pick order memorized for the entire draft, because it's going to change everything depending on what you get on the first pack.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for saying that, by the way. I have to deal with that I have to deal with that all the time. People are always like, you pick this over this, or this is a snap first pick, or this is an X or a Y or a Z. But like, the thing that a lot of people don't realize about limited play, especially draft, is that like, that's an ever changing thing. Like, that's constantly changing. Like, I remember when Triple Scars first came out, and everybody thought that like those big dinosaurs were the worst cards ever. And I'm not saying that they're good, but nobody even considered them for like, say, a red green dinosaur deck where you just play ramp and fatties. Like, nobody thought of that. Nobody would ever think of that. And then you had all these people that were drafting decks where they didn't have a win condition. They might have even been in red and green, and they weren't playing those cards because they were just a 6/5 or they were just a whatever. And it's like, that's like, these are things, these are why you people aren't getting any better at drafting, is that you're being like those people with Constructed, where you just won't give in to any sort of help or any sort of like other thinking, your way or the highway type idea, you know? Like, I think it's just crazy. Like, you have to consider that stuff.
Yeah, so I agree. I agree with you. Those pick lists are not good. It's helpful if you don't know anything and for the first picks. But if you don't know anything, that's already not the good scenario. So ideally, you don't have pick orders.
Yeah, I think that's really relevant. I don't pay any attention to pick orders, but besides the first picks, that's it. And I think that you're absolutely right. It's just, I don't think that any. I think you shouldn't pay attention to those. I think you'll get a holistically better draft if you don't pay attention to that shit.
Yeah, I agree.
So, do you have any scumbag stories for us before we do shoutouts and then call it an evening?
Like what?
You have to have a scumbag story. Come on, like somebody screwed you in a pro tour, or you know, something like that. I'm putting you on the spot here, I know, but it's something that we like to do here on the A-team.
In a pro tour, I don't know. I don't think so.
Grand Prix then?
Yeah.
When you get to play with us peons and scrubs?
Yeah.
I honestly can't remember anything. Like, nothing comes to mind. Is that very disappointing? Crazy.
You've never had a bad experience like that ever? You've never played against like an asshole?
Yeah, probably.
No one wants to be an asshole to PB.
Everyone's PB's too nice. So then, like, everyone else, even if they're an asshole, gets like brought to PB's level.
Everybody's KYT and just is in love with.
I mean, I think that the thing that annoys me generally is when people talk a lot when they're winning and are really quiet when they're losing. I really dislike that. Like, for example, they're up a game, they're like making jokes and act like they're your best friends. And then you beat the game too, and they'll like instantly shut up and be angry. And like. But I don't think there's specific people who. I mean, I'm certain I have had unpleasant experiences in like a high level event, but I don't remember any of them right now. There's nothing that stands out.
That's amazing.
I'm telling you, I don't remember. It's because PB is too nice. That's just how it is. Everyone else is nice back. CJ,
nobody wants to screw them.
If you're nice, you get nice in return, asshole.
Hopefully, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, we all can't be the king of fairies.
Right.
I said fairy guy.
Sorry, golden response.
Can't be the fairy guy.
I'm used to that joke. I've seen a lot of like Una's Photoshop with my picture on them. Scion of Una.
That's fantastic.
Oh, that's epic. You asked for a deck idea. So you should...
No, an article idea.
All right, sorry, deck idea. An article idea. An article idea. You should...
EDH.
write about the merits of Commander. No.
You know, I've played EDH.
Yeah?
Have you?
Yeah. We used to play in our store.
I was going to ask you earlier, but then I was like, no way does this guy play EDH.
Yeah, I've played. My general was Intet, the Dreamer, I think.
Yeah.
The red, blue, green dragon.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and I played a combo deck with like Mana Flare and Turnabouts and just killed people with like Infinite Storm. It was not very in the general idea of what EDH should be, I think.
Okay, there you have it. So PB's really nice, except for when you're playing for fun, and then he crushes you.
I mean, I had a lot of fun casting all those spells every time.
He has fun, yeah.
5 turns, it was very fun.
Oh, You're that guy. You're that guy. I'm glad you don't play on Moto.
I can't do that on Moto. I always time out. Yeah, I played. We did a cube draft, and I didn't have the chance to see it. It was a cube video, and I drafted the kind of cube deck that I always draft. It was like Sylvan Libraries, Genesis, and like Talon Glaciers, and this extremely slow deck, and I very easily timed out. It was like I had.
Went
I don't think that was in video. Yeah, I had like Sylvan Library, and I would click and like to put the cards back, and I would draw both cards and take 8 damage by accident.
Jesus.
And then there would be like Mana Vault and Genesis triggers, and I just time out like in the middle of game 2.
Trying to like figure them out.
Yeah.
That's so. That's fucking awesome. And then,
so
and they just lowered the clock on Moto too.
Yeah, lower now.
It was funny because Lee Sharp was asking on Twitter, you know, what do you think about the timer on Moto? And I'm like, oh, it's way too high. And he must have got a lot more because it got lowered by 5 minutes. So I'm all about it.
Well, it makes Cobblade players potentially the bad ones make bad decisions, right?
Oh, so yeah. I've seen the PTQ finals, Ka versus Ka timeout. Like, I think the last two times the winner, the opponent timed out. It was a Cobblade match, mirror match.
That's awesome. It was PV.
Yeah, it's specifically bad if you have to do a video, because then you have to talk as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's going to be bad for me. I don't think I could do a Cobblade video right now and not time out.
So do you when you do videos then, like you've got your own Moto account, or does like Channel Fireball have one that you use for your videos?
No, I have my Moto account. I've had it for years and never played much.
PV, you know what my loyal followers of 60cards.com would love? If we did a video against each other and yours is on the Channel Fireball side and mine's on the 60 cards side. One can dream.
Maybe.
Are you guys able to do that sort of stuff? Like, honestly, the Running the Gauntlet series that was on that Luis did was outstanding.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Is there any way that that you'd be able to do something like that, like cross promote with us or what?
I mean, on their end, I probably could do pretty much anything I wanted, but I'm not sure how it's going to be viewed. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think you just figured out your new article.
There you go.
That's not an article, though.
It is. If,
that's
if,
the problem. Every time I ask for article suggestions, people are like, do a video. But it's different things. A video is a video.
Yeah, video takes just as much time as an article, like rendering it and getting one that's good and against the right deck, etc.
And I feel like, honestly, with my articles, they're actually useful. But the videos, I do because... Well, not because I have to, but... I do videos just
like
to do, yeah, just to do videos, because I think from a learning perspective, you get a lot more from my articles than from my videos. Yeah. I don't think I play very well on my videos because I'm just, it's true, I'm just not focused. I have to talk while I play and I have to think about different things. I have to think what I'm going to play and what I'm going to say. And generally you worry more about what I'm going to say. So it comes off not very well.
Well, no, yeah, I was going to say from someone, and I think this is true for a lot of people who read articles and watch videos, et cetera, just like a consumer of Magic articles and content in general. I like kind of have ADD when it comes to reading articles. It's very hard to keep me through like one front to back, you know, word for word. But videos, the attentiveness is like much more. And so I don't know if that holds true for a majority of your audience, but I think people get probably more from your videos than you'd expect.
Really? For me, it's the exact opposite. I read articles and I just can't stand videos. I'd never watch videos.
Right. Yeah.
And the thing with articles, I can always skim through whatever I want. Like
yeah.
If something is important, I'm going to find it. I'm going to read that. And with videos, I just have to watch everything. It takes so much time.
Yes. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I find the same thing.
I do agree, yeah, like, you hone your skimming skills and you can find what you're looking for, definitely.
Not all of us have ADD like you, Jesse.
Yeah. So, what were we talking about?
Yeah. PV, who's your favorite author to read, then, since you read everybody? Who's your favorite?
I like a lot of authors. I like...
Well, that's fair. I like a lot of different beers, but one is my favorite.
But one is my favorite, yeah.
What is your favorite beer?
Right now it's Molson M.
It's gross. Yeah. Don't drink it.
It's like Pepsi of beer. It's good.
It's like Dink.
You would know.
I don't know. I like Luiso. It depends from what you're reading for. Like, if I want to have fun or if I want to actually learn something. I like Luis a lot. I like Martin. I like Jerry. I like Chapin. I like Mattel. I like Zvi when he writes.
What happened to Zvi? Do you know him very well? He hasn't been around forever.
No, he's somewhat from before my time. And then, like, he came back, but not fully. I've never had much contact with him. I've talked to him, but nothing extraordinary. Like, I don't really know him. But I've always liked his articles. Before I played in a Pro Tour, his articles were definitely the ones that helped me the most.
Nice. So you have a copy of My Files at home then?
No, I don't. I have a copy of Decade here.
Flores, I'd love to hear that.
Which I got from a friend.
Nice. I wouldn't pay for it either.
Jesus.
But no, this is the only match. I should have another book. It's called Dominating Magic the Gathering, I think. It's in Portuguese. So I don't know the English title. From when I was really young, it really helped me. But yeah, and then I have Flora's book, and then I don't have anything else.
Nice.
So you don't have Next Level Magic?
I don't.
Oh.
Do you have the album by The Gathering?
No, not really.
Why not?
I don't know. I generally don't have reasons not to have things. I need a reason to buy things.
Yeah. Just like he needs reasons to play cards, right? It's the same thing.
No, I mean, yeah. I don't know. I didn't think I should buy it, so I didn't. It's not that I have a reason not to buy it. I just don't have a reason to buy it.
Nice.
PB, you've written a lot of theoretical articles, not only on Channel Fireball, but on your days on Star City Games. Maybe we'll see a book from you someday. Like, I see you write a lot, like on theory. Like, I'm going through your Star City Games archive, stuff like Mulligans, How to Win the Mirror Match, Overthinking, Tempo, Making Decisions in Magic. These are all like things I expect to see in some Magic theory book. And it seems like our game is clearly lacks something like that. Like, I used to play poker a lot and chess, and there's tons of books on those games. But not that much on Magic.
I've definitely thought about it, and it's a real possibility anytime soon. The biggest issue I have with that is not repeating myself in articles.
Okay. Yeah, but that's probably okay, right? I mean,
I don't want to just write like an amalgamation of articles. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I've been archives. What, like, you don't want to charge people for that shit.
And especially because I've already written about everything I could write about. Well, not everything, but like most things.
Right.
So it's really hard for me. But it might work. I might do something with LSV, actually.
Like, I'd be totally interested. I'd be totally interested in buying something like that if you needed to know if there was interest.
You guys would make a killing. I would buy that in a second.
Yeah. If LSV signed an agreement that made sure that he wouldn't put as many puns as possible, I might also read it. So three out of four isn't bad.
He'd read it. He just might not buy it.
Yeah.
So PV, I got a real idea for an article for you then. So okay. I think that one of the most important things that I know I've taken out of this in terms of process is trying to, you know, adjust the way that we build decks. And I mean, especially in light of everything that's happening right now with the new standard upon us, and of course all of our listeners are rampant standard players, being able to, you know, the skills that are required or the perspectives that are required to evaluate cards effectively and to kind of take the whole, you know, tell me why it's good enough. What criteria need to be met in order for this to be good enough to play? That sort of, you know, how do you go about that process would probably be the source of a killer article. And if you mentioned that you came up with the idea of the article while you were on our podcast, that'd be fucking awesome.
Yeah. That would be a real killer.
That's what I'm talking about.
That'd be pretty sweet.
That's actually a good idea.
Yes. Thank you.
Finally, after 37 episodes, Scott has a good idea.
That's right.
Jeez.
He's not totally functionally
terrible.
Listen, hold on. I'm self-aware enough to recognize that I'm functionally terrible, and something like this would help me get over that hump.
The first step in any type of pro addiction is admitting it.
Yeah.
Knowing that you suck is the first step. I'm glad that you've taken that step.
Oh yeah. Truthfully, I'm not as bad as I come off, but I'm certainly not half as good as my castmates, so that's fine.
It's funnier that way though.
But I'll tell you, I can build commander decks like it's going out of fucking style. Oh. I will out commander deck all three of you put together. PV maybe not so much. That guy scares me. Oh wait, PV, you're still here. Anyways.
Oh, Scott. Good old dad. My last question before we get on shoutouts is, what do you think is everybody asks this to all the pros, the best way to improve? Do you think people don't read the theoretical articles that people put out as much? They just read decklist articles, net deck, play the deck. I mean, I think there's a lot of good stuff in your theory, and I'm actually, after this cast, going to go back and reread some of your stuff on SCG.
Yeah, I mean, I think people should read more theory articles, but it's not going to make you better by itself.
Right.
I don't actually have a formula for getting better. I think you have to play a lot.
Okay.
To the point where it becomes second nature. And I think then once you learn the basics, then everything comes easier. People generally... they're not as good as they think they are.
Okay.
And that hinders a lot of people. You know, if you were just... But again, just admitting you were not good is not going to make you better. So I don't really know what you can do. You have to play a lot, try to play with better people. But that's, again, a problem, because if you want to play with better people, the people who are better than you also want to play with better people. So why would they want to play with you?
Right.
You know, it's kind of unfair. I mean, it's unfair that you don't want to play with someone that's worse than you, but the guy who is better than you has to play with someone worse than you, than himself, you know?
I just wonder what advice to give, because I go to a card store and there's people that have been at the same level for like years, like many, many years. And
I think
I don't know how they improve.
I mean, to be honest, I think there is a limit. I think there's a certain amount of talent that you require, not for Magic specifically. Like, okay. It's not just about being smart. I know people who are, like, very successful lawyers who have, like, infinite money because they're very good lawyers. And they're obviously very smart. Like, I know some bridge players who are very good in bridge, and you cannot be good in bridge if you're not smart. And then those people... No, I did not mean Tom Martell. That's not who I was talking about. Sorry. I was talking about someone you don't know. And then they're just not very good in Magic. And there's you need to have a certain mindset. And I don't think there's anything anyone can do for you after a certain point. Like, you might win a PTQ, you might even win a Pro Tour, but you're never going to be really very good if you're not talented, right?
Some people got it, some people don't.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, it's not a nice thing to say, but that's how I see it. I think some people that I know are never going to improve. It doesn't matter how much they play, they just cannot absorb it.
Well, it's just like the NBA. Not anyone's going to get in the NBA, you know, but I mean, Magic's just a brain exercise. It's no different.
It's true. Not all girls were destined to be strippers. So
told you that.
I mean,
your mother.
Yeah, she should not be a stripper.
Oh, let's start the mom jokes, because Crazy Talk didn't get 800 comments.
That's what I was trying to do. I was trying to drive the comments. Apparently, Sorry. Mother jokes drive comments. Who knew?
Anyway, is that the caliber of show you have over there, KYT?
Hey, hey.
I am fucking disappointed.
PV wanted to finish off. What did you want to say?
Nice dodge.
Sorry? I thought we cut PV off there. Did you want?
No, you didn't.
No. I thought you were okay. We just cut you off in the middle of a sentence. But I found a perfect article from Jesse from PV's old days. It's called How to Avoid Bad Ideas.
Oh. You guys are making me look so bad. I'll never get to play test with these guys.
Matt, you got to read this from PV himself, man. How to Avoid Bad Ideas.
You
got to
read it
ideas.
10 times.
You'll
have to link it. Link it to me. PV, I get a lot of flack because I've only been playing Magic a couple of years, and I'm trying to become a known deck builder to an extent because I like it, and I just get a lot of crap because I try a lot of off the wall ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you when you want to come up with good ideas, because you want to come up with good ideas, then it's generally not going to work.
Right.
Like, you know, when the idea itself is the goal and not winning, it's probably not going to work.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Do you, what I mean? Do I make sense?
Yeah,
or
you do, yeah. To an extent, I suffer from that because, like, I get attached to cards. Like you were saying, like, once an idea is bad, you just got to lose attachment. And to an extent, that's one of my faults that I'm still learning, you know. So I definitely hear you there. It makes sense for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to know about, like, getting into a better playgroup, I think maybe you could talk to Owen. Do you know Owen?
I know who Owen is.
Because Owen is like, how do you say it, the newest player in Channel Fireball, and when he joined the team, he was good, but he did not have the same results that he has now. And then this year, he's like, has been doing really well in every tournament. And how do you say, when we got him, he was, I mean, you don't have to be the best or have the best results to be in a good testing team,
right?
You know, you just have to get attention of the people who matter in a way. Like, the people in that testing team have to think you're good. Yeah, and definitely. If they think that, they're like, it's nothing to do with results, really.
GPTC a couple years ago, he was playing there, and I was at that event as well. And I think that's actually where you were at that event too, weren't you? Or were you? Because we've all met you once, I think.
Okay.
But I mean, like, you, I mean, we're not surprised you don't remember. So we're just barnacles that had you sign our friggin'
yeah,
papers,
yeah,
you
know we're just
mean?
Barnacles.
Shit like that happens.
I didn't meet PV yet.
Oh, okay.
Burn! But,
like, burn! Hey,
who didn't meet me?
Car.
Oh.
I'll see you in Providence, PV.
All right.
But, yeah, so it's interesting because, like, Owen was there and he actually did really well in that event, like, really well. And I remember, you know, listening to, you know, a lot of the people that were there. And I mean, I was hanging out with like Billy Moreno and, you know, sort of like those sorts of guys around there. And they're all saying like, Owen's doing really well. Like he was really kind of starting to kick his game up to that sort of next level, you know? And to see now where he's at is amazing. Like he's made such leaps and strides since you're right, being able to join that team and immerse himself in a more quality environment. And you can really see it. It's starting to pay dividends in his play skill and the results he's putting up. So good for him.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is at the point we Owen joined the team, there were a lot of people who had better results. So a lot of people think they have to win something to be on a good testing team, but that's not true. Winning something will not get you a good testing team. What's going to get you is that the people in that team think you're good, and that has nothing to do with winning. Sometimes they just think you're good because they can see you're good, yeah, and you're enjoyable, you're nice to hang out with. Then you go to their team.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks. Yeah, totally.
Also, as far as I understand it, too, there's certain players that are good Magic players but are bad for testing environments because they don't actually, like, bring anything to the table, right?
Like, I mean,
I know players that aren't really good at brewing or aren't really good at making their cases for why you should play this deck or why you should play this card in it. But they're just really good and really tight Magic players.
Yeah, I think everyone has, like, serves different purposes. For example, like Webb, David Oshawa, do you know him?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He never says anything. He's just quiet the entire time. So when he practices, he will play and he's a very good player, but he will never like go on in a speech about why he thinks something's good or I think something's bad. We have to actually ask him. And then for Paris, he randomly came up with Sylvok Lifestyle for our deck, which ended up being really good. And it was a card that none of us would ever come up with, I don't think. So that's he never awesome. Said anything for the entire weekend. But when he did say something, it was something that it was immensely valuable, like because no one else had thought of it.
That's and fantastic. Then sometimes
I ask him about something, like, what do you think about like certain card in draft? And then he explains it very thoroughly. So he's not going to say anything if you don't talk to him, but if you ask, he'll be a great addition to a team.
Nice.
And I think a lot of players are like that. You just have to know how to get the best out of them.
All right. Well, PB, I mean, I think we're I think we're pretty much getting close to wrapping up the show here. So, guys, do you guys have anything to add, or do we want to move on to shoutouts?
Was there anything else that you wanted to cover, PV?
Not particularly. I don't know. I'm up for anything. But...
Well, yeah, our show generally is about an hour and a half long, and we like to get in there and get out really quickly, so we want to...
Jay's trying to say is that we're down for a little bit of the in-out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The ultraviolets.
Yeah. We also don't want to tire you out on the first date, right? We want to make sure that you have something left over for next
time. All right.
Oh.
So I guess we'll move on to shout-outs. I'll go first if you guys don't mind.
Go for it.
Since you guys always leave me to last. So I want to... I want to shout out to, obviously, PB, thanks so much for joining us tonight, man.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to have you. It's really nice to be able to, you know, instead of just telling us the story of PB, like, it's nice to kind of talk to you about, you know, how you do what you do and why. And I think that it's going to really benefit our listeners. And, I mean, I know I've taken out probably, like, at least five different things that I'm going to start doing differently as a result. So that's pretty exciting. I want to, obviously, shout out to everyone that keeps asking me about whether my wife has popped yet, but no, she is still with child. I'm not a daddy again yet. But you know, any day.
Nice.
I have to give a shout out to Zylog from the forums.
So from our comments.
Yeah. So, good dude. Excellent player, good local Toronto grinder, been in the circuit for a long time. But I just want to give him his props. He's a cool dude, and just want to put it out there that you know, there's certainly no ill will. We're all good. Gary apparently got his due, so that's fantastic, and I don't need to get into that any further. And then I think that's about it, I think. One more. I want to extend the invite, Paulo. When you're done your month-long trip,
okay,
and if you come back from your, you know, Tales from the Pro Tour, we would love to have you back, and you can tell all of your awesome stories to us here on the cast if you are so inclined to come back. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, sure.
Especially if you win every single one.
Damn right.
Hopefully. Yeah, I'll gladly come back.
Sweet. Awesome. It's a date.
Jay. I guess a date with four other guys.
A date with four other guys and the king of fairies.
Maybe we can get Nina next time.
Oh, there we go. Nina's going to love this episode. This is awesome. You made her year, Paula.
That's
you made
awesome.
Her year.
All right, so PB, you want to go next or...
Fine. I mean,
yeah.
I'd say thank you. Thanks for this opportunity. It was great. I had a great time. And thanks to everyone who's listening. I mean, it's not nearly as much fun to do what I do if there's no one that appreciates it. So I do it for me, but I also do a lot for the people who care about it. It really makes it it's really important for me that what I do changes something in someone's life. And even if it's a very small aspect of your life. So thanks for everyone who like messages me, says they like what I do. Thanks a lot. It's really important for me.
That's awesome. That's probably the best shout out we've ever had, I think.
Yeah.
Such a mental loss, right? That's awesome. I'll go next. Really appreciate it, Paulo, man. You got a huge fan here. You're awesome. Great guy. Wish you the best, especially this month coming up, man. Tear it up. I'm just going to leave my shout out. Actually, KYT, I'll give you a shout out too. I know people love it when we shout out each other, but for posting that article on your site, man, that's awesome. It's fun doing that cross promotional stuff between you and I. So, Scotty, good luck with the baby. I know it's coming anytime, dude. Maybe even tonight, brother.
Oh, God. Don't say that. She's got a doctor's appointment tomorrow, but my money is on this weekend sometime, so we'll see what happens.
And Jay, don't feel left out, brother. I think you got that. I think you nailed that interview. I think you got the job.
Thanks.
Anyway, then thanks to our listeners this time. I'll just say a shout out to everybody because why the fuck not?
Look at that.
And I'll pass the torch.
So real quick, can I just shoot in because I totally gapped on one? I really want to make sure that I give a shout out to Jake, the professor, Mizaros. He put up two really sweet articles this week on Mana Deprived, and dude's a legit guy. So he's sort of an up and coming Canadian Magic grinder, and you know, he's still a kid. So look out for him. He's got a lot of good years ahead of him. So that's good.
Zippity doodah. We'll give a shout out to Tangent for coming back.
Nice.
And I'm really happy that he's back. If only we could get him on the show maybe once or twice would be great. I wanted to give a shout out to, again, to my friend Steve Domaluski, who's keeping it real in Tabor, keeping the magic scene alive with him and his bros Adam and Cam. I wanted to give a big shout out to PV. I really, 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 really appreciate you coming on the show. I think it's really cool when, like, I know that sometimes you guys can feel that it's like dorky or like just an annoying part of your job, but I think it's really awesome when you guys kind of give us the opportunity to talk to you so candidly. So I really appreciate it. And go ahead.
I don't think it's annoying at all. Again, I think it's great.
Right on.
I'll probably not do what I do if there was no one to see it.
Well, then I have to give a shout-out to myself for making sure that PV sticks around because I'm the best.
Imagine PV didn't know that the only listeners we have are the four of us.
<on the show. laughs> We're just, like, totally faking it. Yeah. This is episode 38. Yeah.
Well, every time someone of your stature comes on, it only blows up the A-team that much more, so it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I got to say, you're probably my favorite guest so far, and especially in recent memory. So thanks again.
Oh, thank you.
And, like I said, I really hope that you do really well on this month-long magic trip of yours. And we'd really love to have you back and tell us some stories about the war.
All right. So which one of you is going to Providence or Kansas? Like, I know the car is going to Providence.
Yep.
Is anyone else? Or?
I don't think so.
Yep. I'm bringing my... I gotta bring some fairy card for you to sign or something.
Absolutely.
My shout outs, thank you, PV, so much for being on. Like Jay, we've had some great guests on the show, and you have been one of the best ones. We've had Jerry Thompson, which I absolutely love, and I absolutely loved having you on the show. Thank you, Scott, for always being functionally terrible. Thanks to Jay, and hopefully both of us. We'll find our new job soon, and Jesse for posting
up. Oh my God!
A nice
the Billy Moreno karma has hit us. Please let it avoid me.
I don't want to sell sandwiches.
Jesse for posting up his article and for letting me post his article on Mana Deprived helped a lot of hits, and I think that. With him on the site, it's just going to blow up even more the traffic that I have. And well, Billy has a job at Wizards now, so we can't say that.
No, we're done with the Billy jokes. Darn.
That's the karma right there.
Well, I'm out of shout outs off the top of my head. Shouts to Drew Levin, who I met at SCG Boston, and he did a terrific job this past weekend at SCG Orlando, I believe, and I hope to see PV at Providence. I have no clue what to play. Probably just going to play Merfolk, I guess. I mean, PV, do you have any experience with Reanimator?
No.
Damn.
No, not at all.
I'm trying to figure out what's actually good. It's like everybody's playing Merfolk or...
I don't like Merfolk. So.
Why not? Because it doesn't play Brainstorm?
That's part of the reason. It's okay. Just... Such a fair deck in such an unfair format. It's just a bunch of...
Like, I talked to so many
bunch
pros.
Of creatures.
I talked to pros, and they're like, the cards I'm going to play for sure are like you just said on the cast, Brainstorm, Force of Will, and I guess that's what we're going to see you play, probably, right? Okay, I'm done.
Excellent. Well, guys, this wraps up this episode of the A-Team. Tune in next week for more special guest action. Lots of love. Get the downloads going, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.